Welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast, hosted by the Azure for Sports team at Microsoft.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Azure for Sports podcast. I'm Suzanne Tedrick, and as always, I'm joined by my Azure partner in crime, Mr. John Flynn. John, how is it going?
It's going well, Suzanne. How are you?
Doing well. It's spring. It is spring now.
Finally, I thought it would never get here. Oh, I can't tell you. But you know what spring means?
What's that?
We are back now with live sports. Come on now.
I had to feign ignorance there.
Oh, come on now. That was a lob at best, right?
I got to build up suspense for everyone listening.
Fair enough. I get that. So I'm kind of like that kid at Christmas. I want just open everything all at once. I don't want any surprises. I can't wait. God, just do it, right? Come on. But anyway, speaking of live events, we have a phenomenal guest today, don't we?
We do. We are joined today by our wonderful colleague, Chris Gordon, who is a program manager. And Chris, welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast.
Hi, guys. It's so fun to be here.
Thanks for being here, Chris. Great to see you.
A lifelong dream come true.
Well, you've taken my line now, right? So, I mean, I've got nothing else to say at that point. But thank you so much for coming on. I mean, look, sports and live events, match made in heaven, or as one of my heroes, Forrest Gump, likes to say, peas and carrots right there.
Yeah, you said it.
Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit, mate, about what your role at Microsoft is, what a program manager for live events actually does for us. What does that mean?
Well, program manager is a funny term. I think that there's 100,000 of us in Microsoft. It's kind of like the generic term for like people who work in Microsoft and do things. So don't read too much into that. My job really is I work on our worldwide media and entertainment team, and we develop solutions that, you know, ideally solve real problems for media and entertainment clients around the world. And what I've been doing over the last year and a half, is focusing on two things. One is on kind of all the tooling around producing live events and distributing live events. And then secondly, and this is really fun, it's how we can borrow not only the technology, but also some of the methodology and process from the gaming world that went as going through a similar transition to the media world. And how did gaming kind of, what tools and tricks and techniques did the gaming industry use that can be applied in the media industry for similar interesting levels of engagement, retention, and growth? So gaming's really figured a lot of that out, and there's a lot that media can learn from it. So that's really been my two kind of focuses over the last year and a half. And I think they go really well together, especially for sports. It develops amazing amounts of fandom and amazing amounts of community, much like a hit game.
And you hear the lot. So I'm going to double click on that one real quick, right? Because in the world of sports, as Suzanne and I play in, you hear the term gaming comes up quite a lot, right? And typically you think of gaming, someone's got a console, an Xbox or a PlayStation or a Nintendo handheld or whatever it may be. And you don't really automatically take that leap from gaming being an influencing factor on something like a live sporting event or a live event that includes fan engagement and all the periphery there. How does that tie-in work, Chris?
Well, I mean, at the very highest level, the thing that is attractive about games and the things that are attractive about sports are competition, mm-hmm. where you are doing your best and you are competing your level best against others, and the community of people with whom you are, you know, having that experience. Like in gaming, it's the content of the game has to be good, just like the content of a match that you might attend has to be good. But it's the people who you do it with which keeps bringing you back to that experience over and over again.
Point.
And that's very much the same thing with sports. It's the people that I go out and I watch the games with. It's my season ticket holder group. It's my alumni group that I meet at the bar and watch the games with. It's a lot of it. A lot of the fandom. A lot of the engagement comes from doing it with your people. And so I think that there's lots of ways in which those things come together. But for me, those are the big high level themes.
I think that's such an important point, especially when it comes to gaming. So I am a casual gamer at best, so I have no street cred whatsoever, but just the community that you build with one another is so very important. And I couldn't agree with that more, Chris. So thinking about it from the lens of cloud technology, thinking about all of the different things that are out there, how has cloud technology kind of transformed the landscape, not only from a sports perspective, but from a gaming perspective? And do you see where there are commonalities and where there are differences when it comes to cloud technology?
Yeah, there are definitely commonalities and differences. To answer your first question, what the cloud provides for game publishers and increasingly for media publishers is access, capabilities, and scale that you just can't build on-prem. And largely think about the volumes of data and the speed at which you can process those volumes of data. Those are cloud native capabilities. They just really only exist in the cloud. And so if you want the kind of insight that comes from moment to moment interactions and tracking of those interactions in real time and responding to those interactions in real time, you can't build data centers and on-prem implementations that will do that at a global scale. And increasingly, these experiences are global. They're not just like I'm doing something within my metro region. Media is a global phenomenon. Sports are a global phenomenon. Games are a global phenomenon. So you need the scale and the speed and the kind of the flexibility of cloud infrastructure to do what gaming is doing and to do what media is doing. So it's kind of, it's almost becoming table stakes for that kind of next generation of engagement. And the thing that I'll say is kind of similar, where there's similarities and differences, the thing that's really super interesting about both of these spaces is that they were largely changed by the same basic event. And around the early 2000s, devices got IP connections on the back of them, that your game console, as well as your smartphone or your Roku box or whatever it happens to be, became a two-way communicable surface. And that happened at the same time. And so games went on this transition where they stopped being a product that you bought and they turned into a service that you would subscribe to. And once they became a service that you'd subscribe to, the next maturation point, the next leap for them was the community. It was the community in which you belong. And if you look at media, and it's the same thing. It's like they became IP connected, and with IP connection comes high-speed data and 4G, 5G, and all of the kind of things that enable that connectivity to be useful. And games and media has also now changed into services in that you subscribe to, but has not yet changed into a community in which you belong. Not really. And the reason why I say not really is that I would say that media is like the headwaters of community value for so many people around the world, that there's so much value, community value that's created around media. It's just that community forms somewhere else. That there is community around Game of Thrones. It just lives on Facebook, or it lives on Twitter, or it lives on some other platform. It lives in your text message thread. That's very true for sports. I mean, if you're watching sports, I don't know, half the time that I'm watching sports, I've got my text open with my friends and we're chatting about what's going on and we're making little side bets on who's gonna, all of that is community. It's just community happening on some other platform. Right. So the opportunity that we see, and this is the difference between gaming and media, the opportunity we see is to like that river of value, that river of community data that starts with the media and is kind of flowing away from the media publisher. We want to redirect that river of information and that river of data back into the media publisher so that they can use it more effectively.
Right. And I think that there's also one more thing that happened when we got IP connectivity to gaming, right? Is that gamers stopped being the nerds, right? And then they were also included into the larger. So you were either a gamer or you were a sports athlete, right? And if you were the nerd or you were a jock, right? Now you're not, right? Everybody games, everyone does that. So I think that's cool. One thing that is interesting that you said there, right? A live event. So a sporting event is a live event that transcends the amount of seats that it has in a venue, right? To your point of you're at home watching and you're texting with your friends, or you're doing whatever communication app that you have, your friends might be at the game.
Yeah.
Right. So I think one of the things that we speak to a lot about with our sports customers and the venue owners of teams is, how do I take the experience in this bowl and take that and put it in someone's living room, or put it in a bar, or put it in on the back of an airplane seat if they're watching it on live TV or something like that? How do you think the capabilities that you just described earlier lend itself to really expanding that live event from a location-based thing to now being anything that you can get connectivity to, it becomes a place where you can enjoy it? Do you think we're there?
I think that you can absolutely experience live events. I mean, everyone knows you can watch sports on the live streaming service today. The thing that you get in the stadium that you don't always get if you're at home is what else is happening around you.
Yep.
What is that group? What is it doing? So you can cheer all you want in your living room, and your cheering is kind of, it's like shouting into the void, right? But what if you could cheer and have that cheer be represented digitally as a part of your community that was building up points so that you and your fandom, your fellow fans of the team event, or whatever it's happening, that could pass some thresholds so that you are contributing in some meaningful way to the success of the stream or the success of the event. And so I think that there's an opportunity to widen the experience from the bowl out to the others. But also, I would turn that around, and I think there's ways to widen the, because there are things that you get at home that you don't always get in the bowl.
Yep.
And so, like, I'm a season ticket holder for one of our local teams here, and we, if there's what we do before every game is we make sure that there's somebody at home who's watching it on television, because that person at home watching on television is going to have instant replay, they're going to have slow-mo, they're going to have all the things that we don't have in stadium, and we want to know, was that a foul, was it not a foul, like what is everybody saying about it? And so I think there's an opportunity not just to kind of bring the bowl experience out, but there's to bring some of that professional broadcast, some of the benefits of a professional broadcast booth back into the experience that's happening for the people who are experiencing it live.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a great call, especially on the benefits of having instant replay or benefits of understanding multiple camera angles. Because I've been at games where you're like, I don't know what that foul was for. I've got absolutely no idea. And then you're just grumpy about it, and then you go on with your business, right?
And there are people who are in that stadium who are much closer to it than you are.
Yes.
You know, for wherever it happened. And wouldn't it be wonderful if you could somehow get access to their point of view for that moment and potentially reward them for providing you access to that point of view? So I think that there's lots of really interesting kind of games that we can play to kind of enrich the experience, both for the in real life participants as well as for the remote participants.
I agree. I think it's cool, right? I mean, there is outside benefits other than sort of maybe cleaner bathrooms and colder, cheaper beer at home than there is in the venue. But I like being at a game, and this is where I call them purists. They can be called whatever you want, right? But I'm not taking out a second device. I don't want to look at a screen. I'm here to watch that, what's on the court, on the diamond, on the field, in the pool, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that with enriching someone's experience? And enriching means getting them to consume information other than what's happening in front of them from a live perspective. How do you balance, I'm here for that show, but I'm also enriching that with the external influences I can now provide from a technology standpoint?
Yeah, I think you have to give control to the user. You have to, like, there are just different people are going to want different things. And I'm right. A little bit like you, and that I want to be in the moment. I don't like having my phone out when I'm experiencing something live, unless I really disagree with something, or I just want to, like, you know, I'm looking for more information. And then I want, like, you know, I want my get it at jail free card so I can get my phone out and kind of pull up something and understand what's going on. And so I think that there, a lot of this is you have to put control in the hands of the users. And then there are tools that you can use so that you don't just, you know, I may want to be, I said earlier, there's someone who's sitting closer to that event than you are. But there's physical infrastructure in any arena that it doesn't have to be a person with their phone out, you know, filming something. You can put phones are perfectly viable second, third, fourth, fifth screen kind of capture devices, especially if it, and you can mount those in lots of different places. And we're working with some really interesting partners that are not only facilitating the introduction of phones into the broadcast production suite, but they're doing that in a way that makes them look like seamless contribution sources so that someone in a broadcast booth can be picking between camera one, camera two, phone one, phone 327, and mixing those all in a broadcast experience.
Hey, see, I'm different. I actually would love to have the second or third screen so that if there was a particularly bad call, there is somebody like, in addition to people that are right next to me, I can commiserate with people around the world. Like, that was an epically bad call, an epically bad play.
Yeah. Everybody's different. Everybody's going to want slightly different things. And some people are going to be wanting to watch and then competing. Like, yeah. I think that they're gonna sink the next two free throws, and I'm gonna do a prop bet on that with my friends, and that's gonna be a part of my experience. That may not be for everybody, but it's gonna be for some people.
Exactly. Like there are people who just want everybody and everything to hear everything that they're thinking. And I fall in that camp. So having those venues is really good to have, knowing that as a fan I have those options. So kind of pivoting a little bit, because I think we can see some of the benefits from a fan perspective, giving them options, but kind of pivoting into some of the more professionals in-house, some marketing, some sports technology professionals, with all of this added capability, how can they leverage these new technologies and these new avenues? What are some opportunities that you see for them to drive revenue or perhaps build a bigger fan base?
So I think there's a lot. When I think about the technology capabilities in general, I think about them in two different camps. One is I need to take cost out of my system. And so I think that there's a lot of interesting ways in which we can kind of propose how to remove cost from a production, sports or any other. And then there's ways in which we want to increase revenue, or importantly, diversify revenue. Because right now, if you look at a media business or a sports media business, largely it's still driven mostly by advertising, some sponsorship, and in some cases, subscription revenue. But there's a lot of other kind of interesting avenues for revenue streams that are not currently being tapped. You just think about microtransactions, which are largely fuel the mobile gaming industry, where games are kind of free to play, but then, you know, the whole trick is getting someone to crack open the wallet the first time. And once it's cracked for the first 99 cents, the next $19 flows really, really easily. And so I think that there's microtransactions, there's sponsorships, there's increasing and enriching the information that is formulating those sponsorship requests or those advertising requests that can drive additional value into that ecosystem. There really isn't a marketplace for sponsorship today, not in the same way that there is a marketplace for advertising. So if you want to buy programmatic advertising, you can do that on a number of different marketplaces today. Microsoft's got the Xandr marketplace, and you know there's others. But that there's not a similar marketplace that really exists for sponsorship. And we think that's a little bit of a wide open opportunity to create value added capability for users in terms of what they're doing with the service, how they're interacting with it, but then also bring sponsorship as a component to that, so that you know, sponsors can get the visibility, the provider of that service can get some revenue, and the users get those extra capabilities, extra features. So what we think about is we want to increase revenue, but also we really want to diversify that revenue because we see there's more opportunity there.
That's interesting, right? I think one of the things, I'm going to dive in a little bit about what you said about the sponsorship marketplace. Do you think they ever, possibly, right? Do you think you ever get to a place where you can have a real-time sponsorship market based upon the activity that's happening in that venue or on that screen at that moment in time? Yes. So for example, yes?
Yes.
So how far away do you think we are from that?
I think most of the plumbing is already ready. I think it's really about, you know, are the buying agencies for sponsorship, are they setting up internal tooling that will enable that to come to fruition? There's much of the standards that have been put in place for advertising programmatic buying of advertising can be reused for programmatic buying of sponsorship. So I just think it's a matter of time. I have no doubt in my mind that that dynamic sponsorship is going to be a part of this overall landscape, because it's so obvious that, you know, I may want a different sponsor for different regions that are viewing the content. I
mean, exactly.
Of course I would want different sponsors for different regions. And so I just think it's a natural expansion, and I think it's going to happen in the next 18 months.
I agree with you. I'm bullish on that as well, because I love you got programmatic advertising. I love when they went from bidding on white space, right, in areas. Now you can bid, and now we've gone into, it's all automated, right? All automated based upon XYZ, and sponsorship has to follow that way as well. And there's going to be various laggards to that. I'm talking primarily in the sports industry, because sports industry has various tiers to it as well, right? Some move faster than others because some are more well-funded than others. And others rely on sponsorship heavily. Others rely on it as a revenue stream, but not so heavily. I want to go back to something that you said earlier on around live events. And you said you had season tickets to a local team in your area.
I'm a Sounders fan in Seattle.
Sounders fan, right? So Sounders fans, right? So we've got Sounders fans, Seattle. We've got Sounders fans who are in Perth, Australia, because I was just speaking with a couple over there. How does a live event in the Sounders ground in Seattle play to the Perth, Australia audience when you've got things such as time differences in between, and you can obviously spoil it if you read the news kind of thing? How do you think that value add on top of that live event that you're getting, because obviously you're not going to be there, how is that value add still going to get someone to watch a game if they know what the score is or if they know what happened? How do you think we can agitate that value enough to go, oh, I know they lose, but I'm still going to go and watch the game and replay or whatever it may be?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I don't have a ready answer for you. Other than to say that one of the things that we see as being kind of increasingly useful for driving engagement, not just before an event, but also during and after the event, is predictions. Okay. So when we talk about predictions in sports, what we always tend to kind of like end up on is gambling and, you know, real money gaming, whatever you want to call it. And there are some really cool tools that are now, you know, newly available that provide kind of consistent low latency for different streaming services, so that people can game real money gaming,
right,
on sports in a way that's fair and equitable. And that's different for different parts of the world, so it's not like a one size fits all thing there, obviously. But what we want to do is we want to think about gambling or gaming, and instead of thinking about it in that narrow kind of construct, think about it in terms of a prediction and a reward. And if you think about gambling not just as that, but as predictions and awards, there can be all kinds of predictions of things that are going to happen in a particular match. It could be, you know, certain players with playing time or plays or fouls or penalties or free kicks, or, you know, all kinds of things can happen within a game that can be predicted and rewarded. And if you have an event, that means that I can now make those predictions in advance of the event. And so I'm engaged before the live event starts. And so that provides more time and more opportunity to create a deeper relationship with the service. And then there's the things that happen during the event. And even if I already know the end score, I may want to watch that event to see whether my predictions are coming true, because I didn't just predict that the Sounders were going to, you know, win 2-1. But I predicted all kinds of things that might have happened that match, and I'm in competition with my friends and family in Perth to, you know, understand whether or not that those things are going to come true. So there's engagement that could happen during the event, and then after the event, there's all of the things that can happen as a result of those predictions.
Yes,
and sports leagues in particular are just awash in value that they can provide to their fans at virtually no cost to them. You know, like if I win something and I get a jersey with a signature on it, it costs the league or the club so little to do that.
Agreed.
But the value to the fan is enormous. And so just by having those kinds of functions and capabilities available in a post-match. I think that means that the engagement wheel can kind of spin all the way through before, during, and after, and can lead into next season. And there's all kinds of interesting opportunities there.
I love that.
To segue on something you mentioned, because, you know, cost is always going to be something that the teams and the leagues think about for everything that they do, whether or not to invest in new technology, whether or not to continue what they're doing currently. And so that's always going to enter into the conversation in terms of sports or any other industry. So thinking about some of the things that would be afforded with doing perhaps live events and live streaming, do you feel that having a solid cloud infrastructure is going to help to increase efficiency of live events and perhaps some cost savings? Or do you think that there's still perhaps some maturation that needs to happen for that to be achieved on an enterprise level?
Let's say both. We're never done, but I would say that you can spin up live production capabilities in the cloud now and then spin them down when you're done. And that is much more cost effective than building a control room in New York City. If you think about the kinds of events that are broadcast today, they're relatively low risk. You know, like everybody knows that the NFL is going to make money and the NBA is going to make money and Major League Baseball is going to make money because they're low risk. But there are 1,100 NCAA teams. There are 100,000 or plus NCAA. There are 1,100 schools. There's 100,000, you know, teams. There's hundreds of thousands of NCAA events that happen every single year, but not that many of them are broadcast on television. Right. And why? It's because you can't quite make the obvious use case for my school's, you know, field hockey team to put it on air. However, what if I could bring the costs on that way down and I could tap into the fandom of the people who actually really love that sport and love that school and love that community and who would be willing to engage differently and spend differently? I can change the ROI kind of calculation for that. So when we look at the opportunity for live events, you know, everyone obviously thinks about, I think about the sound. I'm a Sounders fan, so I think about like big, major, global brands. But the real opportunity, I think, is not the large global brands. It's the thousands of events that FIFA puts on every year that you don't know anything about because they're not the men or women's, you know, every 4-year tournament. There are thousands of European soccer matches that happen every single year that never get broadcast. There are thousands of NCAA events. There are thousands of, you could even go down into like high school, et cetera. There's just so much content that just doesn't cross the current ROI threshold. But if we can use the cloud to bring down the cost, to bring down the production capabilities, to enable global distribution, and we haven't even talked about AI yet, but AI is going to plug into this, you know, this solution in the next, you know, few days here and provide all kinds of capability for language dubbing and captioning to make content that is locally produced, regionally accessible or globally accessible. I think that there's going to be a lot of amazing innovation that happens for a lot of the live events and sports that are not currently available on TV, but are going to be soon.
Yes, yeah, spot on. I completely agree with that. And content, we are not a want for content, right? There is, in sports, there is just, as you point out, there is just so much. And maybe a bit of foreshadowing there around IT. Look, I mean, we're in our IT jamboree right now, right? Everyone, IT winter is done. We are out. We're in perpetual sunshine at this moment in time, as far as everyone else and, well, the journalists are concerned, right? But AI in sports has been around for a long time, right? And some of the use cases you mentioned, but auto localization based upon language translation, and then you can do neural voices to create the same announcer's voice and cadence, but in a different language he or she doesn't speak. Amazing stuff, right? But how far do we go? I'm like the doom guy today, right? It's like, how far do we go? Right. So how far do we go though with AI to go, do we need players now? or are we just going to have AI-based avatars that have an undetermined outcome, play a game against each other, have a boxing match with each other, and then we'll have auto journalism on top of that, and we'll have announcers go, there isn't a soul who's been involved in it from a human standpoint. We're just the fans of the fake sports. Do you think we're ever going to get to that point? We're going to now watch Xbox games versus play them?
I don't know, but I think no. I don't think that's going to happen, because I still think that we're human, and I still think that, you know, we live in the meatverse, and in the meatverse, we want to know that if I work hard and train hard, that I can compete at a high level, and that there are people, and that I'm fascinated by the human specimens who do that. And I want to see those human specimens. I think that there's something very human about sports. And I think it's one of the reasons why I love it so much is that it's universal. And it grounds us in our reality. And so
I agree. I
think someone will try that, John, no question about it. Someone's going to try like my robot, AI robot versus your AI robot. I just don't think people are going to watch it.
No, we're going to stick here in the meatverse. I'm stealing that, man. I love that.
I took it from somebody else.
Oh, I love it. Well, you're paying it forward. And I agree with you. And I've always said it, right? Sports is so much more than just the game. There is this whole ancillary community. There's this whole ancillary benefit to sports that it really does have the power to change the world, and does change the world on a continuing basis, right? Because it's more than just two people getting in a ring, or a bunch of folks getting into a pool, or a bunch of athletes jumping around and scoring goals, right? I mean, it creates jobs and it changes communities and furthers education. That you don't do that with two avatars going at it in the basement, right? I mean,
that's right.
I think we still heavily fund athlete programs in schools, right? We don't train thumb programs so you can be better at your control thing, right? So I think AI is going to play an increasingly important part of the broadcast. And I think that has to do a lot around sustainability, right? You brought up earlier, you don't have to build these big control rooms in New York City anymore, right? Do you see... cloud and AI getting us to a point where we don't have to have these big honking trucks driving from location to location to put on these big events, such as a Super Bowl?
That's already starting to happen. You're hearing about several different sports organizations who started using a lot of what they called Remy production during the pandemic, just because they couldn't put people in all the places, but everyone was still at home and still watching television and still wanted to watch sports. So I think that's absolutely already happening. The sustainability angle and how you can use that to bring carbon out of your overall equation is just as real. It's just as real. It just means a different thing to different places around the world. And that largely has to do with regional variations. But it's very, very real. It does have a big impact. And it's not just about the people in the trucks. It's about the team. So let's just say I have a terrific director, and I can now use tools like Azure Active Directory to plug them into a control studio that they have full access to everything that they need to have access to, but it's controlled. I can use Teams or other tools like the one we're using now to like use remote production, where I can tie someone's video into that production suite. And so I can have a terrific director who does not have to get on a plane and fly to two or three cities in a week. They can do it from their home in Ohio. And that goes for behind the camera talent as well as to the on-camera talent. So it's more about how do I bring my event to the team, as opposed to bringing my team to the event. And so there's all kinds of knock-on effects that are beneficial for cost, for sustainability, for lots of reasons.
And Chris, to your point, I think during the pandemic, we started to try to find these unique use cases of like, how do I continue to let people do their best work without putting them in harm's way and without putting them at risk? And I think we're seeing a lot, that's transcending into, well, how do we continue the things that were working really, really well, like having the fact that we can have our workers work anywhere, do their production work anywhere. As to what you said, bringing it to them versus making them go to far-flung places and still getting the job done. So I completely agree. There's a sustainability aspect that I think will be really, really impactful for us for many years to come. Any final thoughts that you'd like to offer before we'd wrap up?
I just had so much fun with you guys. You know, when can I come back? That's all I want to know.
So the part of the benefit for us, right, is that we're all similarly employed here, is that we're going to look at the advancements for live events to affect obviously this podcast, because the on-screen talent, especially on this side of the camera here, needs a bit of work on this. So if we could use some of your talents on that, that would be phenomenal. But in all seriousness, Chris, thank you. I think this is definitely a one of many, right? Because as we get smarter about, in the sports world, as we get smarter about the capabilities, the implementation and the costs associated and the ROIs associated with live events and the advancements that we're doing, we start to see new things eke out and new wonderful ways of doing things. And we'd love to have you back to speak about that, because I know that you're working very closely with a lot of our organizations today on figuring out what those little magic moments are.
Yeah, I'll tell you when I'd like to come back. I can't talk about it right now because I'm not supposed to. But we are the tools that we're taking from the gaming industry and applying to media. We've just really started that effort over the last 6 to 9 months. And we now have some live deployments of doing that in different parts of the world. And what I'd like to do is, like, once those have been running for some time, we're going to start to have actionable data. The same data that we have data from the gaming ecosystem, but we're not 100% sure it's going to translate one-to-one into media and sports, but we're going to have some data from media and sports about the types of engagement, the types of interactions, and types of value that those broadcasters are getting from that methodology. And I'd like to come back when I'm able to share some of that, and we can dig into some of those details.
It is a date, as they say. I love it, leaving us with a cliffhanger.
I know, I love it. No, Chris, you are always welcome back, provided that I am not replaced by ChatGPT. You're always welcome.
Disclaimer, none of these questions today were actually written by ChatGPT. They were all they were all done in the Meatverse.
They were all human. They were all human-based.
Chris, thank you so much, man. This has been absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait for the time when you're unable to share some of those pieces of data, and we will have you back on 100%.
Great. Well, thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, John. It was a pleasure being here. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Chris. Absolutely. And with that, that brings us to the end of our latest episode of the Azure for Sports podcast. But thank you so much for joining us. As always, reach out to us if you have any feedback on this and future episodes. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Take care.